Oh my goodness.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my goodness, it is Pop Culture Stars. It's Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the East Coast, of course. This is Dr. John Stavey, and I am pleased to be here on a cold, cold night in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and inside where it's warm, having my favorite beverage, Diet Ginger Ale. We got, of course, Dave Atwell. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well. It's warming up a little bit here this evening, enough where I can go out and enjoy a cigar from Godfather Cigars and my favorite malt beverage with a blue ribbon on it. It's good to go. The wind is dying down. I know the wind was what was making everything cold earlier, but everything's good. It's awful dark back here. I think it's the first phase of the moon. So, I mean, back here in the woods, everything just goes black. So, yeah, those are the nights I carry a flashlight out with me. Normally, if it's the other side of the phase of the moon, the backside of it, there's enough light where you can just see the trees and everything and, you know, keep your eyes peeled. But you don't want to be out here the first half and you hear some crunching and you don't have a flashlight handy because you don't know whether it's big, small, or in between. And God knows I'm...
Well, you can tell, Dave, hold on. You can tell the size of the foot. If it goes heel, space, toe, you know what big thing it is, right?
Well, I ain't going to sit around and interview it. I want to see what the hell it is and then run inside. So,
you don't want to interview Bigfoot? I'd give my teeth to interview Bigfoot. That'd be the greatest thing in the universe.
The funny thing about out here in the woods is that I've been out here at night doing the show and everything, and I've heard some crunching. And I'll just turn the light around and, you know, look, and it's just a little bit of crunching. You know, figure it's a deer or something. You know, figure it's a, you know, a bird or something to that effect. Look up, and it's a damn 100-pound doe. But just the same, I hear some stuff coming through the trees like the world was ending, and I look up and it's a little squirrel. So, I mean, it's always...
like the world was ending?
Yeah, and God knows, I know I owe too many people money to the point where I don't want to be in the dark for so much because they might be coming out the woods to get me these days. So, yeah, outside of that, looking forward to tonight's show. I hope you guys are doing well.
Absolutely. From our northernmost outpost, Indianapolis, Indiana, the home of the Brickyard 400, ladies and gentlemen, none other than Todd. How are you doing tonight, Todd?
I am outstanding, the supernatural, and ecstatic to be here, Dr. John, Dave, and great to be with you guys. It's so cute that Dave was talking about it being cold this morning. Dude, true story. Sunday was so cold that the only time I got up to go outside was I had to take trash out anyways, and I knew I had to go fire up the vehicle because we were sitting there at single-digit stuff. Yeah. Forget that mess. That was it. Yeah. That was the only time I went out, and I was hard-pressed to actually get out of my pajamas then other than the fact that I, you know, wanted warm clothes. Yeah. Forget it. It was
really cold. I can imagine. Well, I tell you what, we've got an exciting show tonight. It builds off. I like it when something builds off something else that's going on. I was interviewed by some authors from Random House Publishing this past Sunday night about
nice.
The Lizard Man, my book, and the new version 2 that's coming out in the middle of February. We've got 5 or 6 new stories and some interesting reflections about the Lizard Man phenomenon. And so I was driving. One of my very good friends was having a birthday party tonight. It was at the most popular Japanese steakhouse. So I couldn't miss that. Just couldn't miss some great fried rice and filet and all that stuff. It was wonderful. So I was thinking, what could I do? Because people do enjoy the Lizard Man promotion. They really do. And actually tonight, after Pop Culture Stars, I'm going to be on Jen Crew's of the She Squatchers show, The Journey Radio. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to talk about my new, the new stories in the Lizard Man book and some very interesting things that have been happening on that front. But I started reflecting and I said, you know what, that Lizard Man thing in 88, 89, and 90 went to the extent of viral that we could do without the internet. And I thought, you know, it would be nice to reflect a little bit on what did it mean to go viral back in 88 and 89. I mean, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have cable television. We did not have a national news feed except for, you know,
cable TV back then.
Well, I guess we did. But we didn't have national news like we do now with CNN and Fox. And so, and I don't think people were really.
One man show.
Do what? Do what?
CNN was a one man show back then.
It wasn't much. Like it's grown and Fox News came on online in the early 90s. But I was thinking, how did things go viral? Well, first of all, I want to just briefly go over the story of the Lizard Man and how in the heck did these little tiny events go berserk. First of all, in the late summer of 1988, a gentleman was on his bike, stopped off at the well, the Scape or Swamp Bridge, where they have an artesian well. I've had water from it. It's absolutely delicious. It's cold year round. Doesn't freeze in the winter, but it certainly is cold in the summer, and it's wonderful. So he just put the kickstand on his bike, and he bent down and got him some of that cool, refreshing water. And he looked up, and standing in front of him, about 10 feet away, right across that little creek, was what he described as a lizard man. It's about 10 feet tall. Scared everything out of him. In fact, I think there was nothing left of him. He jumped on that bike and pedaled as hard as he could back toward Bishopville, which was about 3 miles, not very far. And then came the massive sighting by Christopher Davis. He was leaving the McDonald's, pedaling home where he worked. He worked in the McDonald's. It was about maybe 3 miles, and he's, you know, a young man, about 19 years old. And he was pedaling and pedaling, and he had a flat tire on his car right next to the Butterbean Shed on something called Browntown Road. Now, again, that was maybe 4 miles from downtown Bishopville, and about 4 miles because the McDonald's was on Interstate 20. So he stops, gets his tire iron out, gets his spare, and he starts changing the tire. And he's got the tire changed, but his tire iron's still on there. He heard a rustling. He looks up in that night sky, illuminated by the moon. He sees something about 8 or 9 feet tall. It doesn't look happy. Looks like it might be a lizard man. So he jumps in his car, takes off for his house. He doesn't even have time to take his tire iron off. So that thing's going bam, 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 tearing up the left wheel. What do you call it, Dave and Todd?
Quarter panel. Quarter panel.
The what?
Quarter panel.
Okay. It's tearing that up, and he is flying as fast as he can, and he gets home. So next day he goes, his father takes him to the sheriff's office. He draws a picture of the lizard man for the sheriff. They go out there. They don't see anything. About 2 weeks later, there was another sighting of the lizard man. In total, there were about 13 sightings, all limited to that one area. Story shows up in the Camden Independent and the Bishopville Chronicle. And that's it. So how on earth did those little incidences, they were huge to the folks that had them, but they were fairly small in a completely rural town in South Carolina. The next spring, Good Morning America showed up, plopped their studio, their external studio gear on Browntown Road, and sat there and waited for the Lizard Man all day. And they were live for about 2.5 hours, and then they had outtakes and reporting that they showed throughout the week looking for Lizard Man. By that time, a gigantic crowd had developed. There were thousands of people out there on Browntown Road, not 2 miles from Bishopville, South Carolina. How did something like this spread from Bishopville, South Carolina to New York City? Well, I did a little research. The newspaper wire service.
There we go.
That was one primary way that local stories, you know, such as humanitarian acts, lizard man, serial killing, that was pretty much how everything got around, was were the AP, Associated Press, and UPI, United Press International Wire Services. Every radio station, every television station had one. They had a teletype machine. Do you guys know what a teletype machine is?
I've heard of them.
Yeah. It's like a television that types. Hence the name teletype.
It really and truly.
Sound has a very neat sound.
And it was a type. It was basically an automated typewriter. And I remember when I was in junior high, just turned 16 years old, and I had a job at the local radio station. And it was my job on Saturday, because I held down the Saturday afternoon shift. That was usually Braves baseball, and they could trust the studio to some 16-year-old clown like me. It was my job every hour to go clear off the paper from the teletype machine and put it on a clipboard, so that Sunday morning when they came in and before church services, they read the news from Saturday. That's what we had in Morganton, North Carolina. So they would go through there, and I would try to use a highlighter and highlight anything that looked national or international. That was my job. So anyway, that's how we got the news. It was through nothing more than a teletype machine. It was amazing. I was amazed at the technology. I had no idea. And it came through data lines that were run through the phone line. And I mean, you're talking about slow. It would sometimes go click, 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 click. It was amazing. So that's how we got the news. But I was now thinking, you know, so obviously Lizard Man spread far and wide. It made newspapers. It made magazine covers. It made everything. But then I started thinking, you know, we have had several viral stories, and I came up with what I believe to be, since World War II, the most amazing stories that truly went viral, and how in the heck did they make it from local yokel to the front cover of Time magazine, which at that time, that was like being on the front page of the world, that cover of Time magazine. And here's my four. And after I give you my four and how they made it to the world, I want to ask you guys, what are some that you can think of, and how did this work, and how has our world changed? I mean, used to be it would take, if it wasn't on national television, it used to take 1, 2, 3, to 4 days for a story to get out. Now today, Nick Sandman, who was confronted on the steps near the monument in Washington, D.C., by that gentleman playing the drum. That was the top story on CNN and Fox News within 10 minutes. I mean, unbelievable. So, you know, the time differential has so changed. But here are my four stories in chronological order. Elvis. How did Elvis make it big? I may be a little older than you guys, and I can tell you the story. He had promoters that took him around to small towns where they had radio stations. He did radio station interviews, and he went out to stores and sang in record stores. That's back when we had record stores. I mean, you talk about doing it by hand. They got in that car, and they just drove and drove and drove all over the South. It wasn't no newspaper, no Time magazine in the very beginning. So that's how Elvis made it. He was the first music viral story, I believe. You know, there was Glenn Miller Band, there were the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, but Elvis pioneered everything. Maybe Chubby Checker and the Twist, but Elvis really pioneered it all, I think, going from town to town. And next, in chronological order, the Cuban Missile Crisis. That was on television. And 2 days later, all of us kids were taught how to walk home from our neighborhood schools. And there you go. There you have it. It took our 6 o'clock national news, which used to be the highest rated show in all of television, because that was really the only place way back then that you could get national news. Then, of course, there were the radio stations, but that was every 5 minutes on the hour, and that wasn't very much. The next thing that really, really went viral focused on Hollywood and politics, and that was the death of Marilyn Monroe. How did that one get out? National news on television. And then the final one of the ones that I consider gigantic and important was the death of John Kennedy. Now, I don't know do any of you remember that, or was that before your time?
Yeah, I wasn't even a sperm.
Todd, what were you?
I was in gestation.
That is the first thing that I remember on television. And I'm going to tell you an odd fact about the assassination of John Kennedy. Does anybody remember why this was important? And I have never heard this brought up. And this is a Pop Culture Stars exclusive. Does anybody remember why this was important? What is the most unusual thing about this that never occurred, I believe, prior to this? They interrupted national television. It was about, I think it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And they televised the parade from Dallas. They'd never done that. They'd never broken into that in the middle of the day and televised the president in a parade. That had never been done before. First of all, why did they do it? Maybe let everybody see him get assassinated.
Unique. If there really was a first, that's indeed unique.
It is indeed strange that they picked that one. But anyway, everybody found out about it when it happened, because it was done. It was a live broadcast, just like just through network television. All the networks carried it. It's crazy. So we see the national television gutting it out locally at record stores and the 6 o'clock news. That's about the only way that we had to get news of this caliber. And when you think of the Lizard Man story, making it to ABC Good Morning America live on the scene on Browntown Road, that's crazy. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
And there were, well, you know, they cared about small town America and unique things back then. More horrific things, or things that they could use to promote their agenda, as far as that goes. But yeah, there were actually, I think there was something that went far more viral than that and lasted a long time. The story is supposed to be there was some dude that worked at a shipyard. And got his name was James J. Kilroy. And he was a graffiti artist to a degree. Maybe not much of an artist, but he had a little way of doing it. And boy, that whole Kilroy was here. I remember that. It seems to me the last time I seen it was probably in the 70s. But it was still, you know, still around then. And you're talking something from a guy that worked in shipyards in the 30s and 40s. Kilroy was here. I think we all three of us can... Well, at least two of us will be able to remember seeing that. What
yeah,
it looked like.
Yeah.
What, Dave?
I used to draw it on my notebooks all the time. Where I should have been paying attention in class. But, yeah.
We used to play a game in college called Botticelli. It's also known as 20 Questions. Does anybody remember that game?
Yep.
I got so mad because when I started trying to identify where this person was, it was like in North America. Yes. Then someone asked a question that totally contradicted that. And the answer was no. Then I said, was this person in Europe? And the answer was yes. And then Keith, it was one of my roommates, he said, all right, I will share with you something. I don't want you to get thrown off. I'll give you two extra questions. This person was ubiquitous. And I didn't know what that meant, but I was too embarrassed to ask. It meant everywhere. And I didn't know. I should have asked, but that's how I learned the word ubiquitous, was from that game. And then we all got so mad at him, we never played Botticelli again. And he finally said, it's Kilroy. And we all went, oh, no. I mean, that just sounds like something out of The Simpsons. Anyway, or South Park. So, yeah, going viral. You know, when you look at the Nick Sandman thing, and that was at 15 minutes after it happened, after I believe CNN took the footage that was aired first, and everybody knew about it. Fox News had it within 30 minutes. It's unbelievable. And what going viral is today is very different than what going viral was before the internet. And yeah, Todd, you're right. I always forget, you know, the superstation WTBS Atlanta was all over, but they sure weren't all about the news till Turner fired up CNN as a second idea. So you're right, and I stand corrected on that. But it's amazing about
that's what I'm here for, Dr. John.
Just to correct me when I forget things?
No, just to point out something and bring back memories.
Yeah, I remember on Superstation Channel 17, they started out with like five shows. And one, they ran for 3 hours a day. It was Love American Style. Does anybody remember that?
Yeah, sure enough.
What a funny show. They could get by with that one again. And Joanne Worley, who was also on Laughing, she was great. It was a lot of fun.
Oh,
it was,
man.
That
was a very talented woman.
Well, it was, and it was fun, you know? It wasn't heavy on the politics. It wasn't heavy on this. It wasn't a monster film. It wasn't a lot of things. But what it was good comedy that puts you in a positive mood. It really did. So three cheers to Ted Turner. Everyone's forgotten him. But, yeah, it was great. But going viral, what's the last story you remember going viral, Dave?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about it on how and the what and everything, but word of mouth. And right now I'm watching this miniseries on Netflix called Murder Maps, and it's about different murders that went on in the London area between, you know, about the 1850s and 1950s. And it's such a concentrated area, of course. You know, part of the premise of the program was to talk about, you know, how these guys got away with this stuff with that many people in such a concentrated area. So, you know, word
of
mouth.
You mean like Chicago now?
Yeah, no kidding. Word of mouth now is not what it used to be gossip-wise, because – yeah, as a matter of fact, I saw, you remember that old wind-up game Perfection where you crank the little timer on it, you put the pieces in the little puzzle grid, and if you didn't do it in a certain time, it blew all the damn pieces out, scared the daylights out of you? Well,
right.
I remember as a kid playing that game for hours on end. Why? Because there wasn't a damn thing else to do. So... you know, when it come down to gossip, there wasn't a whole lot else to do. So, you know, when we were talking about a book that went viral, one of the things that came to mind was the Salem witch trials. All it took was one person acting like a clown, and then you had a bunch of spinsters getting together, gossiping, and before you know it, the entire Salem community was just in tremendous fear that anybody who had a birthmark or a mole or maybe had a fart that smelled like potted meat was part of the devil and a witch. And, you know, that went viral on a colonial level, if you will. And it was all because people were running their mouths with no substantiated evidence, which, if you see a lot of the viral stuff now, with the exception of videos,
yeah, there
you
go.
Yep. I mean, how many times we've been on Facebook and see on there, Orson Welles died. Goddamn, Orson Welles been dead 15 years. But somebody posted on their page like, oh my God, you know, we lost a great one. Yeah, he's been gone for a while now. But people here at the
Hold on, Dave. This is kind of funny that you happen to pick that one, because when I text message on the subject, that was exactly one of the things that came to mind on how things went viral, because hit Orson Welles, I have right here written down the radio, War of the Worlds.
War of the World.
I'm just saying. And
but
so that, well done, Dave. And just... four more words for you. Get out of my head.
But folks listen to the radio because there wasn't a damn thing else to do. You know, at night, you shut your doors, you lock your doors, you close the windows, and that was it. There was no carousing after night. So everybody would turn the radios on, you know. And they listened to that broadcast, and it was just so damn convincing that, you know, people started, you know, peeking out of their doors and looking out their windows and battening down the hatches, you know. And then, of course, you know, dawn broke and people walked outside to go to work. And all of a sudden it was, well, damn, there's nothing going on out here. But, again, it's another form of people running their mouths. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily take technology for something to go viral. It just takes people... with little to occupy their time, to gossip. I think gossip might have been the original viral, if you will. Hell, even at the workplace, I've been, Todd, you've been party to it. Well, I'll purposely say something to somebody just to see how long it comes back around to me.
But, right. And, there were a couple things that we did on purpose that were pretty damn funny.
With no malice intent, just doing it because we ain't got a damn thing else better to do with our time. But it was funny just how quick. I remember walking into the building one day, and this is back when we were working with Steve. I was heading to Myrtle Beach for the weekend, and I walked through the door, and they said, "How's it going, Mr. Dave?" And I said, if I can make it through today, I ain't got to worry about coming back. I'm Myrtle Beach bound, right? Walked to the office, got my walkie, walked back there to the fresh office through the bakery like I used to always do. And by the time I got back there, I heard Steve on the walkie asking me to come up to the office. So I turned back around and walked the two football fields right back up front where I just left. I said, "What's going on?" He says, "Man, he didn't tell me you was transferring." I says, "I'm not transferring. What are you talking about?" He says, "Transferring to Myrtle Beach." I mean, in less than 5 minutes, it had gone viral. You know what I mean? And what happened is, I'm sure, and I know exactly which door greeter it was, and her name will remain changed to protect the innocent, but I can just picture her walking 10, 20 steps over to the other one and said, "Oh, God, Dave's transferring." And then those two went up to the membership desk and said, "Did you hear Mr. Dave's transferring?" And before you know it, it all went to hell. So, I mean, we've sat right here and watched it happen on us. Could you imagine on something something real? Something that really happened? You know, like the assassination of our president or, you know, witches in Salem or Marilyn Monroe's death or whatever. I mean, hell, everybody gets involved.
Well, I don't know. I'm fairly sure Jeff Goldblum's got about 5 different tombstones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's another one's died a bunch of times.
I don't know if it's because people liked him or they didn't like him or, you know, they were just trying to make... Hell, he might have started the things to make himself relevant again. Hell, who knows?
Did you really say that, Todd?
I did, but tell me it ain't possible.
Well, I always thought he was relevant.
All right.
As a matter of fact, Todd, Todd, you remember when another friend of ours, a gentleman, unfortunately, by the name of Dave, passed away prematurely? And the word got in at work that David died. And, you know, I had gotten a phone call at the house here, so I knew which David was, and I knew damn certain it wasn't me because I was still living to the best of my knowledge. And next thing you know, my phone started blowing up. And what was funny about the whole thing in retrospect is, if I'm supposed to be dead, why are you calling me? If I answer that phone, you're in a world of shit. You know, but... Again, it didn't take but a couple seconds for one person to say, Dave is dead. It was the wrong Dave. But folks were absolutely going bad. Not because I'm, you know, Elvis or anything, but the fact remains.
You're not?
Close. Not since I lost the hair. But, you know, the viral thing. It only takes a second. It's like dropping a match in a damn dry brush pile, man. It don't, and it doesn't take technology. Doesn't it all?
Yeah, and just think, that whole thing, I think I made reference to a joke about, sadly, because, you know, I can be inappropriate at times. You all may have noticed once or twice.
No, not you, Todd.
Made a reference to the whole Cheech and Chong thing about Dave's not here in reference to that kind of stuff. The wrong day, pal.
Absolutely.
The all right, for viral things. The Dr. John had touched on it a little bit about the radio thing as far as a music person or whatever. And it's amazing how, you know, we got to go back to the day of, and he was talking about, the whole music thing and all that with Elvis coming out and that. I thought it was pretty cool. I watched this thing on the song by the Safaris, Wipeout, and how they did it. And, you know, they got a couple promo 45s out and... they're sitting in a restaurant and a waitress, you know, came over and goes, hey, what do you guys do? You know, and she's talking to him, serving, and, you know, people, it wasn't a lot of rush at restaurants back in the day. People would go in there to sit down and talk and eat, you know, they weren't sitting on cell phones and all that stuff. And that's when business lunches and such were business lunches. Turns out, you know, that those guys say, hey, we're producers. And she was like, yeah, you guys got anything hot? I know so-and-so upstate, and this is all in Cali. And you got anything? And they're like, yeah, we got this 45. And they gave her the 45. She sent it up there. And this is a 45 that had been passed off to these guys. They passed it off to her. She sends it up way. This is the way people were back then, just for the record. Hey, you know, got some, I'll send it out. They sent it out. And there was no pun intended when I said just for the record. The, you know, and that hit a bigger DJ and a bigger production place. those folks talk, and they got it put on a bigger label. And then the whole thing on the 45, it got onto this late evening show where they would play a handful of singles and let people call into the radio station to tell them which one they liked and that. And if it made the cut, it would get to the next night. And each night, this became a more and more requested song. And that was basically the way it broke out. Just those little radio shows. Radio, you know, what a thing. It's just unreal. You know, think about the singles that dominated airwaves. Like, My Sharona. My God, was there a point where we didn't, like, hear that felt like a million times a day?
Well, wasn't
yeah,
there something about the Woolly Bully song that people thought there was some type of government conspiracy, that there was some type of code or something to that effect, or what? Do I have the right song?
Oh, man. That song's got a handful of conspiracy theories, I'm rather sure. Oh, yeah, that was part of the... Oh, crap, what is that facility where they were doing all the mind control stuff? Yeah, the LSD experiments and mind
protection. I think that was SRI, Stanford Research Institute.
I'm thinking the one on the East Coast. Yeah, East Coast.
That was West Coast. East Coast. That was, if I believe, University of Virginia, because they did all kinds of stuff up there. Charlotte.
Yeah, they had another one where the government was doing it, had the little underground facility.
Quantico?
Since been cannibalized. We talked about it on the show, but it's all right. It don't matter. There's dozens of them. Woolly Bully is one of those things. That was, you know, was that an activation song? Was it? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
I'm going to hit a timeout button here, if you guys don't mind. I've got to get staged up for an interview about my new book, Lizard Man Storybook Version 2. Jen Cruz on ParaXRadio.com is going to be interviewing me. So I'm going to return.
Since you're going to be with Jen, the girls got their necklaces from when we were together there at the horror house.
Yep.
Right. So and the girls dug it. So you know you can pass that love out. You know, because the She Squatchers made that possible.
Yes, they did. So I will do that, and I'll say goodbye to next time, and you guys be good, and I don't have too much fun without me, okay?
We'll try not to, brother. Take care, Dr. John.
Okay. Good, everybody. Good. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Oh, man. So now it's viral.
Yeah. Please. And there were things going viral before that. I mean, back in Rome, I remember they had a bunch of things where they were worrying about the crabs.
Yeah, I mean, it's viral.
So things were going viral a long time ago, just saying.
Yeah. I mean, even the thought of assassinating Caesar, I mean, arguably could be something that was viral, you know, where one guy come up with it, and next thing you know, another guy heard it, and it just carried on and on and on. And, yeah, I mean, it's what stories are made of sometimes, you know, and it doesn't have to be a news story. It could be, you know, a falsehood or just a tale of some type or another. But nevertheless, you know, if it catches on and everybody gets in on it, yeah, it'll go viral. So
yes, sir. The you know that I mean, I don't know the You know, there were video things and stuff that did that with sports, and that the NFL used to have their little, I don't know, the word crunch was in it or whatever, and it would talk about some of the hardest hits, and, you know, LT and Theismann would be involved, and, you know, stuff like that. Those things would do it. And of course, they're kind of still around because that's still one of the crunches that was heard around the world. Kind of things. What's some of the stuff I wrote down? See what you're going to say. There were newspapers. We touched on that. Magazines. There's a bunch of them. Well, not so much, you know, a wide variety of magazines. They sure are. The printed press is not what it was across the board. But, you know, back in the day, well, heck, but Rolling Stone is probably still around, right?
Yeah, but they're another one that's kind of turned into funny
it
pages.
Definitely changed. We can leave that one kind of alone. Pinups went viral back in the day. Posters, that was something I didn't even think about. Posters, right?
Right.
That started with like the original pinup girls and all that kind of stuff. So that's one of those things that went viral. But, yeah, a lot of the magazines, there were a ton of music magazines, you know, Guitar for the Practicing Musician, Hit Parader, all those kind of things, you know, for the pop culture stars, mentioned in Rolling Stone series, all those kinds of things. There was, and I have no idea how long People and that had been around, you know, everything that had done. But there was, you know, and all those different levels of things. Soap operas were definitely their own culture and had their own whole group of magazines and stuff like that. Printed press. Let's go with this. I believe the National Enquirer is still around. There were a variety of those things. And boy, you talk about stories that could go viral, you know, from that, because they put out not just, not just the scandalous stuff about people. They would, they'd bring out the weirdness, so-and-so's an alien, and, you know, there'd be the Bigfoot things and whatnot in there. Let me see what else. Reference TV, late night talk shows and the various talk shows. Those made things go viral back in the day, right?
Yeah, you're right.
You know, the water cooler talk, if there's such a thing anymore, well, yeah, I guess the reference probably dates me. A comedian would be on The Tonight Show. Boom, you know. And, you know, how many cats got their break doing that? Durations of that. We touched on radio, The War of the Worlds. What about all the different serial shows that were on radio back in the day? You know, pre-TV. Families sitting around, gathering around and doing those kind of things. Work. You know, word of mouth, like you touched on that. People got it at work. They got it at the restaurants. They got it, you know, that kind of stuff there. That was where a lot of the word of the mouth went. They, you know, out shopping, that kind of thing. dare I say it, church as well. Back in the day, the 45s with the radio stations. What about when people were able to do their own cassette tapes and have their own recorders and do things and tell stories and that kind of stuff? VHS tapes being passed around back in the day. People would record stuff that way, and they would copy the VHS tapes and get them passed out, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There are a ton of things for it going viral. We touched on a bunch of those. But here's something I wondered about. It kind of jumped in my head when I was telling the story on Wipeout. Again, people were not in such touch. Right, we didn't have cell phones, pinging messages, you know, Can you pick this up on your way home? Or, you know, the kid's sick. Can you leave work and go do this, do that? The structures at home were different. You know, before there were two working parents or a shit ton of single parents. You know, the breadwinner would go to work and bring the, you know, the information back from work that they had. The meantime, there was the own net, their own network of the domestic engineers. You know, those that were keeping the home made and all that kind of stuff. They'd find time to get together and talk and do those kind of things. And there were always those family things that families would do. I remember we would have one of those folding card tables, and that would be our puzzle-making table.
Yeah.
We'd pick up one of those, you know, 1,200-piece puzzles or whatever, and everybody would sit around and do that. And it, the image jumped in my head at the thought of that. What the hell would that be like, people trying to do that today? The whole, what do you call it? The, like I can't see the attention span to sit there and be looking at all these crazy ass pieces. You know, we would do the old school rules of sort it out, get all the edge pieces over here. We can build the frame, and then we can start doing it here. And then we'd look, you know, was there a portion that we
yeah.
could, you know, pick color themes on? You know, you'd have a bunch, you'd sort by color and try to get, you know, might have a pond in the middle of it. Boy, all right, let's see if we can build that pond, and we can kind of, you know, station that in the center, and we'll build in and we'll build out from that. You know, we'll do whatever.
You know, I saw at the damn thing, was at Michael's, they actually have sorting trays now, where you're doing a puzzle, and you could put certain colors or objects or whatever into these little sectioned off trays in this little platform thing. So I told Dale, I says, well, goddamn, that's cheat codes right there. I said, if I can damn dump thousands of damn pieces.
Oh, hell yeah, sitting on the beach. You would keep, you would sort all this shit, you would try to find space for it and do all that. You'd start doing the frame, you'd have stuff sorted in there, and then a bunch of shit would go back into the box, and the best, and then there, you know, the best and the worst part was everything that was loose, you know, your sections that were put together were all that stayed on the table, and then you put everything back in the fucking box, and you were back at starting. You know, back to the beginning,
right.
Starting it all up.
Right.
You know, because there was not a lot of sandwich baggies back in time where you could have just, all right, that's it. Grab some baggies and put them all in that. You know,
that was
have a shit ton of them. There might be one big baggie to put them in the box in case it falls over, because the first time it, you know, you dropped the box, it had already been opened and you lost a piece, man. Boy, there was hell to catch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that
but
was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're just, yeah, all that stuff. Oh, hell no. Yeah, but could you imagine people trying to do that? It's funny, you talk to cheat code. People sitting here with their damn cell phones or whatever. There'd be people trying to figure out, is there an easy way to put this puzzle together? I don't want to have to sit here with my mom and dad any longer, and I gotta.
Yeah. Does that mean I have to look and find them and put it together with my hands? Yeah. Is that so freaking hard?
Yeah, the but you know, that's always thought of it. And it was one of those lost things that you come back to the family. We've done a number of board games together. We still like that kind of stuff. Really do. Sure enough, there is boy.
Board
heck yeah.
Unfortunate casualty to the technological age. I mean, that used to be the way everybody got together back then, you know, and now a lot of families don't even sit in the same room now, you know.
Right. The, you know, you you're being cruel if you tell them to put their damn cell phones down at the table or whatever. But you got that one. Look, you know I'm the duty this week for casualty calls, so this is a phone you don't want to hear ring.
Yeah. Well, you remember back in the day, a lot of folks, when it came time to eat dinner, they shut the television off. You couldn't have the TV running while you were eating dinner because it was too much of a damn distraction. Now,
absolutely.
I mean, how many people actually use a dining room table now? You know,
right.
Junior carries his meal off to his room or, you know, next to his video game console or whatever. Dad grabs his and goes sit down on the deck with it. Mom eats hers in the kitchen right there next to where she was cooking. The family doesn't come together at all. But, you know, it's all a part of, modern day living, I guess. Because I know I'm guilty of it. I can't remember the last time we played a board game at this house.
Yeah, we would have to, have one of those nice breaks. And hell, I feel like a lot of it wasn't so I was on active duty or whatever, but. Sit down and play. I had some visitors. We did that. We played Risk.
Oh, yeah. That was a good game.
Was it Risk? Maybe it was Axis and Allies. I don't know. Probably something like that. Risk is fun. Axis and Allies, both great games.
We remember Trivial Pursuit there in the late 80s was going batshit because, you could play six people. And, it got everybody involved. And, if you played in teams or if you played individually or whatever, that game there for a while was, if you didn't have Trivial Pursuit at the house, man, you were deemed as a, recluse. And
right. There was that Pictionary. Damn,
yeah,
what's the family being able to sit there and do variations of charades? God,
yeah,
who knows how long that thing's been around.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I tell you what, we're pushing 7 minutes and change, I'm thinking.
Yeah, might be that time to go ahead.
I'm all for hit the rack, to be honest, the stuff to eat. But this has been fun. It's been just, kind of eclectic. Didn't really see this coming. I got thinking about all kinds of dumb shit that I probably didn't need to be thinking about. But it's fun, it's just kind of neat. Like, some of this stuff, when's the last time we thought about it? Like, I was out there and I saw that whole thing in Kilroy, and then I was like, son of a gun. Every now and again, and I still think, there was a pop culture reference to that in Kelly's Heroes when they did their variation of it and had Up Yours with it after they left the scene of the crime.
Yeah, that's true.
When they robbed the bank thing, there was a variation of that. It was kind of cool. And of course, Kelly, Kilroy, whatever, it's kind of close. That was kind of neat. That was fun. Just, one more way to kind of bring us back full circle. You got to pop out there to Godfathers again. Man, been a while. I'm waiting to get my antennas. Unless it's a really unique occasion, I won't have a cigar until I see Gary. And we got much to catch up on. Let me see what all is. I can't think of any crazy plugs off the top of my head. Oh, okay, I got one. I'm struggling to try to come up with something, just rambling on, sorry. I had, I'll tell two stories in one, or a couple stories in one. It'll kill most of the time. I missed all my adopted Marine daughters' first pregnancy, but have been able to see her hubby and son several times. And I had found out, you know, they had been struggling, trying they were working, you know, trying to get the second one. And they went out, you know, doing all the fertility stuff and this and that, the other thing, and, you know, all the tests and all that, and it all failed. They gave out, you know, they dealt with the heartbreak from that, you know, and what do you know, the moment they relaxed, it happened. The so I was one of the first that knew about it, and it was a royal bitch to keep that secret, you know, because I didn't tell Yuki nothing. So when Yuki was up here for New Year's, I do a morning text to my Marine daughter, you know, happy Monday, happy Tuesday, that kind of thing. She gets stuff back, and Yuki was up here that day. And she texts back about the effects of morning sickness without saying morning sickness. And I showed Yuki that text, and you could see her get all concerned. And I knew what it was. And I was like, I was dead set I wasn't keeping the frickin' secret any longer. So I went ahead, you know, I sent a couple texts back to her, you know, told her to call, and so that she could let the cat out of the bag. And the whole thing was, you know, Yuki's all concerned at this point. You could see it on her face because she has, like, no poker face, none at all. And then when we got Steph on the phone and were able to tell her the secret, just the way her face lit up, the happiness and all that, that was the best moment of the whole visit then with Yuki up here. So to Steph and Kyle and soon-to-be big brother Cameron, congratulations. That's just freaking huge. That's, you know, that's just amazing. It's great. And they were up here this Monday. They went, did a run through the Children's Museum. And we all ran over to Shapiro's, which is a classic Jewish-style deli, you know, in the New York-style tradition. And we all went and had a hell of a good brunch there. But, yeah, to Kyle and Steph, that's my shout-out for the week.
Outstanding. This is good to hear. I mean, for crying out loud, congratulations. It's, you know, it's... Sometimes when you see children that aren't being paid attention to, you kind of scratch your head and you think about families that try so hard. People that were just natural parents just have that chip in their programming that would make them good parents, and they fight tooth and nail to have children. In the meantime, there are people out there who pump them off as quick as they can, and they become, you know, wards of the state before they're 14. Yeah, so congratulations to them, man. That's good to hear. My plug isn't really a plug. It's one of those things that kind of will make you stop and think. This by no way is an endorsement or a ha-ha by any means, but it's something that is meant to kind of make you stop and think. So, you know, we've talked in the past about corporate greed and how, you know, 98% of America is working for 2% of the people, blah, blah, blah. You remember the burger joints called Crystal, right? They were kind of a Wendy slash White Castle hybrid type thing.
It was definitely a runoff of White Castle for sure.
Right.
I tell you what, a young Marine in Georgia, I was grateful for that joint.
Yeah, because they were open all hours of the day and night, and they'd have them greasy burgers that fit just right when you've been drinking. They filed for bankruptcy. They're done. They're wrapped up. So, you know, when you hear that, you're like, gosh, you know, that restaurant's been around for 70, 80 years. That's unfortunate. So you dive a little deeper and you start reading what their CEO said, and the CEO said that they could not keep up the workforce was failing them to a point where they could not keep up. They had high turnover, and the increased wages that other chains were paying employees was outdoing them, and they could not hire people that would get the job done. And that's why they were losing sales, and they eventually had to go belly up. So I'm reading all this, and I'm scratching my head. I'm going, wait a minute. So what I pull out of this is this company can't hang because they have to treat their associates fairly. And it totally reversed all of my, you know, oh shucks about reading the headline on it. And, you know, I understand market trade trends change and everything. I also understand McDonald's is probably having one of their best decades of all time. So you're going to blame the fact that you have to pay your employees a competitive wage, and you have to treat them with a certain shred of humanity to keep them from going to other places and work. And because you cannot do that, that is the reason why you hire riffraff, and that's the reason why the riffraff doesn't perform, and you're not making sales, and your company fails. That's what I got out.
You know what, Dave? And it's not the first place, and we bloody well seen the business strategy change to where we're willing to deal with a high turnover of people. There's always somebody looking to make money, so I can always hire a new register person.
Right.
And all and that. They're willing to do the turnover and make things easy enough to get to do in their seniority thing because, yeah, hopefully some of those places will find a way to let the pendulum swing back. But, yeah. You're spot on, and it makes it, you know, and the thing is, there ain't a damn one of those people that didn't need a job, but, you know, at any of those, whether they were highest quality or not, they needed it, but they got to start somewhere. And, you know, that food industry, that's such a, for so many people, it's a, you know, before it became something other than a stopgap, it used to be a great entry, that kid in high school, you know, finding a way to make a few bucks on the side. You know, it was the food industry and grocery stores. It really was. And now, I mean, there are so many people making a living at that. It's hard for them to get in.
It was just frustrating because when I read it, it didn't seem like the CEO was taking any culpability about his ability to lead or possibly marketing strategies or enhancing a menu or anything like that. It all came down to the fact that I can't treat my associates like dirt, and that's why we can't make it. And for a guy that's so big on capitalism like myself, you know, if you're the fastest runner, you should get paid the most out of the runners. If you mow more lawns than the other guy did, then you should get more money. But when these corporations are standing on the heads of their associates to enhance, I never begrudge a CEO or a board of directors for having a salary. I mean, those guys live and breathe it. They fly on planes. They leave their wife and kids behind. They dedicate themselves to the business right around the clock. But on the flip side, when you have an associate base, there's layoffs or there's no incentives or the entire workforce is, you know, making minimum wage and you garner a $20 million bonus. To me, there's a certain amount of, what's the word I'm looking for? You've got a lot of splaining to do when it comes down to that. And if everybody, as a matter of fact, there was a real estate company just here recently, had some $10 million windfall from making a, as a real estate company of some type, and they had their annual Christmas gathering, and there's like, you know, 200-300 people with this company. And the CEO got up there and said, hey, if it wasn't for you guys, we'd have never made this goal. So everybody has an envelope, open it up. And the lowest on the totem pole bagged, if I understand, $50,000. Okay? So it can be done. Now, could the CEO, could the powers that be with that company folded that up and put that in their pocket? Oh, certainly. They could have done it all night long. But what they did is they reinvested in their people. They took that money and they gave it back. So those people who worked their asses off to create that goal and to make that company a success are now going to repeat that behavior because they got 50,000 plus reasons to do it. And as I was saying, you know, the other day is if I'm sitting on a pile of chicken nuggets, let's just use that for an example. Okay. And that pile of chicken nuggets is, I've got to have a ladder that I got to climb, and I climb up to the top of the ladder and kind of lean off of it, poof, just to get on top of this pile of chicken nuggets. All right. And I start eating chicken nuggets and I get to the part where I'm full. I mean, I can't eat another chicken nugget if I could try, right? But yet I've only lowered the pile by about 2 or 3 inches. So then a guy walks by who stacked all those chicken nuggets, and he hasn't eaten in a week. How bad is it going to kill me to take 2 chicken nuggets out of that same pile and flick them down to him and go, here, dude, here's 2 chicken nuggets? It's not going to lower me at all. It's not going to cost me much because I'm already full.
Right.
Okay. Is it really going to slow my roll that bad to flick that guy 2 chicken nuggets? No, it won't. And that's where, when I was reading this article about Crystal, you know, when I got done reading it, when I first started reading it, I was going, ah, shucks, man, that's sad to hear. By the time I got to the bottom of it, I was like, the hell with them. Perhaps it's it could be deemed as a euthanasia to the workforce. You know, now nobody else has to go there and get the hell beat out of them for, you know, a turd pay and a turd conditions and turd everything else. And, you know, perhaps they can move on to these other places that actually value to a certain extent their workforce. So, again, you know, just a little thought and just a little type thing. So look around you and, you know, don't be afraid when your youngins haul the trash to the curb or, you know, when the wife cooks you a good meal or, you know, somebody does something that they don't have to do, but do it just for the good of the household or for the workplace or for everyone around them. You know, don't be afraid to say thanks. And when your good fortune comes, don't be afraid to.
Not.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to spread the blessing. I ain't got to say you got to give it all away. That's not my point. But just remember how you got it. And, you know, keep that in mind. So anyhow, that's my soapbox. Wasn't really a plug. It was more just to kind of run in my suck. But that being said, I reckon we will say our goodbyes. I'm going to walk back inside, get to the computer, seeing I'm running the board so we can sign off and hear the British lady. So, Todd, you want to say your goodnights, bud?
Yeah, definitely going to go ahead and shoot in some of those goodnights. I want to say thanks this weekend. Was able to have a couple call, a good call with one of our regular listeners, Justin. He just had his birthday, so I want to get him a little love out there. Justin, happy birthday. All the folks that have liked and, touching on pop culture stars lately online, we appreciate it. The folks couldn't do this without you. Really, we're grateful for you. We love the feedback when we get it. And even the negative, as long as it's reasonably civil. You can be a glib negative and, get your point across and be pretty darn solid. And that's fairly cool. But got to tell you, thank you again. I mean, I couldn't do this without my mates here on the show. And I understand those that go ahead and they listen free, or they go ahead and they buy from the few options. Don't know if John knows what the paying options are. I appreciate you for sure. Dave, always
absolutely
a pleasure to hang out with you, brother. Man, it's been it's been a long range journey for us both.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always good to get on and shoot the breeze and everything. And looking forward to next week, see what we can come up with. Hopefully John's doing good with his book interview this afternoon or this evening. And look forward to having him back next week.
Yeah, or maybe we'll be able to get, I'm looking forward to maybe get the She Squatchers here on this show, or even a percentage of them. They are really neat. They're really cool people. They're darn fun to be around.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having them on because I've heard nothing good about them. Sounds like they're a good crowd to hang out with. So, all right. Well, I'm about ready to cue up the British lady, and so she can go worry about the Royals, and we don't have to hear about it anymore. So, with that being said, I want to wish everybody a good night, and be careful out there, be good to one another. And that is it. Dave and Todd from Pop Culture Stars. Y'all have a good evening. Todd, take care of
us. You too, Dave.
Here she comes, and...